Hey everybody, welcome back to Rugby Wrap-Up. Matt McCarthy at Studio 34 at the Fantasy Sports Network, and I have some massive guests today. We have the Titan, Mr. Stephen Lewis, the Elite Sevens coach here on the East Coast in New York City, former COO of Pro Rugby USA. Next to him is Mr. Mark Winokur, the manager of Team Canada and also the manager of the Ontario Blues. We welcome him. And we have Mr. James Kennedy of the Murphy Kennedy Group, who is a big supporter of rugby and may or may not be involved in a pro setup in the United States sometime soon. But we know that we're pressed for time, guys, especially with these two because they have day jobs. So, Mark, I want to thank you because without you, this show wouldn't be going on. Mark facilitated this show, the company he works for. They were kind enough to give us some airtime, so thank you, my friend.
Blame me, sure, thanks.
Yeah, well, we'll start throwing under the bus right away. And by the way, just in case you didn't know, for the folks at home, that's the you're talking too much bell or you're misbehaving bell, and we hope we don't have to use it. And we can use a sponsor for that bell as well. You are our northern borders and important to USA Rugby as well. Tell us about the state of Rugby Canada right now.
Well, you know, I don't think there's any short answer. There's no black and white definition. Obviously disappointed with the result in the World Cup qualifier. But, you know, is the sky falling? You know, there are some things that would suggest no. Our U20 team beat the U.S. by a similar scoreline to the senior team, only in reverse, to qualify for the Junior World Trophy. Our club level and senior regional level stuff is continuing to produce decent results. So, you know, are there some systemic problems? Yes, and I'm confident Rugby Canada will solve those. But, you know, is the sky completely falling? No, I don't think so.
What are a couple, three of the systemic problems that you guys face?
Well, listen, I mean, we live in a massive country where travel is very expensive, and it's all virtually impossible for us to assemble on a regular basis ahead of tests. We don't have a pro league, which we need to work on. We probably need some work on our global scouting system. We don't have access to Polynesian players like some other countries do. And you know, these are things that we need to work on for sure.
You know, we'll go back a couple of 3 years, and it was as though you guys were on the precipice of just blowing us, the United States, out of the stadium at particular times. It seemed like everything was in order. You had a Kiwi running the show, right? And then it seemed to go astray a bit when you started focusing on the sevens team.
You know, that's possible. I mean, we may be trying to do too many things at one time and being, you know, doer of many and master of none. That's for other people to decide. But I really think that some of the problem is just the group playing as the national team is in a little bit of a confidence deficit right now, and nothing a couple of wins wouldn't solve. As I say, the underpinnings seem to be sound, and eventually we will figure this out.
And you know, the record in recent matches, I think, is it going on 6 or 7 matches that Team USA has beaten Canada? But the matches have been pretty tight, except for the last one. And even that one was tight for an uncomfortable amount of time if you were a U.S. fan.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's they won 5 in a row, then we had the draw in Hamilton, and then they won the last one. But if you look at the 160-minute aggregate two-match series, it was after 134 minutes, it was 37-34. So,
yeah.
You know, they were clearly the better team in the last 26 minutes. But for the first 134, there was almost nothing between them. So, you know, which do you emphasize and which do you look at? Obviously, there's some self-reflection we have to do. But, you know, as I say, I don't think the sky is falling.
And you did have a great result against the Glendale Raptors with the Ontario Blues. And the Glendale Raptors are considered one of the top teams in this country. You have to have satisfaction out of that.
Well, you know, I think the idea of that match, you know, I talked to Mark Bullock about that, and we set that up between the two of us, was to have two of the, you know, more successful sub-international programs play each other. And it was a terrific game. I've had great feedback from it. And, you know, a logical thinking person would think that Ontario might make a good candidate for participation in pro rugby in some iteration in the near future. And, you know, those discussions are happening. And
so maybe something like a Major League Rugby setup in the future for maybe a Toronto or an Ontario-based franchise?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, no one would dispute that we need to get more of our players into a pro setup and get them paid. And you know, whatever the quickest path and the most viable path to do that, we're going to look at hard, sure.
So speaking of logical thinking people, Mr. James Kennedy, James, your name is always coming up about professional rugby here on the East Coast, New York City specifically. You tried with the Pro 12, it didn't work out for you and your group, now maybe the MLR or something else. It might work out to be a smart thing to have, if you have a professional setup coming in, or to maybe get some exhibition matches against the Ontario Blues or the like of that.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense that the support is here in New York. I mean, we've got stadium backing now, so, and we're working our facilities. I mean, Steve is coming on board to help out with that. And a lot of stuff. We're going to Denver next week to look at Glendale. So, and then Ontario, Chicago, Boston are all interested. And I think if we can get some tournaments or some friendly games next year or some cup games, we could really get some interest going and get the players excited.
So you just specifically named some of the MLR franchises in Glendale and Chicago.
Well, there is no MLR franchise in Chicago
right.
at this point.
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
So not Boston.
But hopefully, or...
nor Ontario.
Nor Ontario, or nor New York. So.
But
the interest is there. Everybody's there, and it's a matter of getting everybody excited and committed to moving forward. I mean, the exciting thing about a Northeast conference in whatever professional league setup it is the travel time is less. We can bus to games, cutting down costs and generating local rivalries, which is always a big bonus.
Can you tell us a little bit about the stadium setup that might be happening in New York?
Well, we're talking to three stadiums, so I think to mention stadiums at this point would be a bit early, but we're talking to three stadiums, and we have a first choice, second choice, and third choice. So the ball is in our court.
All right, so you heard it here first. We've got two professional franchises in Toronto and New York with Mark and Ken Kennedy running them. No, it's a hope anyway. It's a hope, and they didn't say no. And on that note, we'll have to bid them adieu because they do have to get back to their day jobs, and we appreciate your time, Mark.
Thank you, Matt.
James, we'll come back, Matt, with Steve Lewis and two special guests that have been on the Eagles right after this.
This is Saban Doxy, and you're watching RugbyWrapUp.com. Yes.
Michael Petrie, three-time Rugby World Cup scrum half for Team USA's men's Eagles. What do you make of this high school rugby national championship here in Kansas City?
It's an amazing atmosphere. It's an amazing tournament. I mean, the organizers did a fantastic job. There's so much support from so many different people. I mean, you know, sponsors like the Murphy Kennedy Group just really are what make this happen. And you know, the athleticism on display here is only a testament to how far we've come as a rugby nation. But the future is very bright for rugby in our country, for sure.
Hey everybody, Matt McCarthy back at Studio 34 for the Fantasy Sports Network and Rugby Wrap-Up. And we have some new guests up here with us right now. Steve, Mr. Steve Lewis, is now joined by Lara Vivolo, the legend of the New York Rugby Club and a capped USA Eagle and the current head coach.
Assistant coach.
The current assistant coach, soon to be the head coach after this show, of the Army women's team. And we have Mr. Nate Augsburger, who is the captain of Team USA recently against Ireland, right?
Yes, sir.
He's an Eagle. He's an old blue player. And we're going to find out exactly what an Augsburger is just after we start talking to Lara. Lara, your bio in rugby is impressive. But you started in a roundabout way playing rugby. You went to the University of you went to SUNY Cortland.
SUNY Cortland.
Give a holla for SUNY Buffalo, SUNY yeah. Cortland. How you doing? But you didn't like the coach of which team?
Basketball.
The basketball team. So you went and had a 4-year great swimming career.
Correct.
And your brother talked you into playing rugby.
Yes, he was playing at SUNY Oneonta, and he said, "You're big, you're strong, you like to run, so why don't you go try out for the rugby team?" I said, "Okay," and never looked back.
Yeah, so looking back now, we can see what an accomplished career it was. You joined the New York Rugby Club, right there, the New York Rugby Club corner, making Steve cringe. New York Rugby Club, you had two national championships with the New York Rugby Club. You had nine caps
with the USA.
With the 15s mm-hmm. program. You also played with the Atlantis squad.
Yes, it's right? A lot of fun playing sevens when you're fit, so.
Yeah, I've never had that. World Cup, fifth place with Team USA?
Yep, fifth place in 2010 out of 12 countries, and it was an incredible experience. I wish we had made top four, but it wasn't in our cards.
What was your favorite experience as a player?
I would say World Cup. World Cup and winning the first national championship with New York in 2006.
You also were on a whole bunch of, you won the ITTs, rather.
We did, back in the day when it was called the ITTs, right?
Yeah, yeah. And for the folks at home, if you could tell us what that acronym stands for, you'll get a date with Steve Lewis for coffee here in Manhattan on him. I think you guys know about the bell. All right, so Nate, we're going to catch up. Well, first, Steve, you're coaching with Lara at Army.
That's correct.
Yeah. So how is she as a coach?
Tremendous. Great great attitude, great presence, and really sort of connects with the players very well. She asks a lot of questions, and so I have to come up with a lot of answers and be prepared. But
do you know the answers to the questions that she asks you?
Most of them. So it's been good. It's been great working with her and Bill LeClerc, who's the head coach there as well.
If you had to critique her coaching style, or you had to label it after somebody that you know or the folks out there know, well, who would you say, or what would you say with the, what was A, the critique, and B, what her style is like?
I think that's for another time, Matthew. I don't think that's appropriate for this venue.
Steve clamming up again on camera. It's a talk show, guys. It's a talk show.
He's still my mentor, so.
All right. It's good. You've always been very diplomatic, Lara. Biggest transition for you going from player on a high level to coaching?
Well, first of all, every time I saw the pitch, I still wanted to be on it playing. So that was a big change for me. It's challenging. You know, it's just changing the mentality from thinking like a player to thinking like a coach. Not thinking like a tight five player, but thinking, you know, as a coach who can coach 1 through 15. And every day that I'm out there, I'm learning something new. And it's been a great process, and I'm excited for the future. And I finished my first year with Army, so I'm really excited to start the second season and continue to learn as much as I can from Steve and Bill LeClerc. So far, so good.
In comparison to when you were playing college rugby, what are these players like?
Wow. Very different from SUNY Cortland back in 1995. They're amazing cadets and individuals. They're disciplined. You know, they're academics. They work really hard in the classroom, and they come down to our rugby complex, and they're just focused and tuned in and want to learn as much as they can because many of them are brand new players, and so they haven't played before.
Yeah, I would be remiss if I didn't salute Mr. Cortland Rugby, Brian Stretch Humphreys, who's back up there in Del Mar, Albany, right?
Yeah.
All right. Nate, first off, what's with the hat? What is the hat?
It's a nice hat. It goes with my outfit. You know, I like wearing snapback hats.
Fashion statement?
Fashion statement, definitely.
Fashion statement.
Yeah. I should have worn a Minnesota Vikings hat, honestly, but it didn't go with that.
Are you from Minneapolis?
Yeah, Minneapolis. That's correct.
Yeah.
There's a $20 bet between Steve Lewis and James Kennedy that Steve could get Minneapolis mentioned in here. All right, so you're from Minnesota. Your favorite movie is Fargo. You played for the Golden Gophers, but your dad played rugby and got you into rugby, so that's interesting.
That's right, yeah. My dad was a college football player. When he was done, he ended up moving to Minnesota and started playing rugby. A bunch of his buddies got him out. And so as a kid, I grew up just around a rugby ball, and it was awesome. And
what was your first game? How old were you when you played in your first rugby game?
My first organized rugby game, I was 11. My dad and his teammates, they all had kids around the same age, so they taught us all how to play. Ended up finding some team up north that we could have a run against, and it was a lot like watching 8-year-olds play soccer, just everyone chasing after ball.
But yeah. Was it tackle or touch?
It was tackle, yeah.
At 11?
Yeah.
Good, so right out of the gate you were tackling.
Yeah.
What position?
We didn't really have positions at that point, but I started on the wing. So
pretty much everybody starts on the wing.
Everybody
right?
starts on
I
the
started
wing,
at fullback and then went to wing.
So. I do know a guy that started at hooker, though. And like, and I was like, were you trying to kill the guy?
He must have been a big guy, though, you know?
No, he really wasn't. But all right, so Golden Gophers, Twin Cities Rugby. You transitioned into the 15s program as a sevens player.
Yeah.
Right?
Correct.
And you actually got to travel with the squad to Rio for the Olympics.
Yep, I was a traveling reserve with the squad. It was a great experience.
Wow, that had to be awesome.
Yeah, it was. It really was. It was fun to be there. A lot of work was put in with that entire team. I was a part of a lot of the tours and stuff, so I was really in the heart of it. So to be able to see it all the way through the Olympics was just, it was a great opportunity.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but I want you to think about having Mike Friday as the next 15s head coach, and I want to talk to you about that right after these words.
After witnessing firsthand the crimes against refereeing that were committed on behalf of the British and Irish Lions, Jonathan Wicklow Barbary sought out referee Greg Gilliam. What he found was shocking.
The referee's life is a lonely life. You don't have any friends. You're deaf, dumb, and blind. Is that accurate? An idiot? Dopey? Missed the great call?
No.
Use your good eye, because you're blind as a...
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
You're almost as fit as the players, which are half your age.
Yeah, you have to be just as fit as your customers, your players, yeah.
How come you're not wearing your Coke bottle glasses? Where's your hearing aid?
It's
back to your fitness.
Yeah, do a lot of upper body.
Star jumps, karaoke?
No, nothing like that.
Dead man carry? Press-ups?
Put press-ups.
Frog kicks?
I'm not sure what frog kicks are, but I'm sure.
I'll show you off camera. We're going to leave you alone because you're used to being alone. And quite frankly, after speaking to you, you deserve to be alone.
Thank you, Jonathan Wicklow Barbary.
And we're back. Matt McCarthy at Studio 34 for Rugby Wrap-Up at the Fantasy Sports Network. I have Mr. Stephen Lewis, Miss Laura Vivolo, and Mr. Nate Augsperger here. Nate, we left you with a cliffhanger and the folks at home. How about Mike Friday as the next head coach for the 15s program?
Mike Friday is a great coach. I back him. I think he's done a lot of positive stuff with the sevens, obviously, and he actually did spend some time with us on the 15s back in November. He was on the staff. He was our attack coach, and he was teaching a lot of really good stuff, which also leads me to believe he knows what kind of culture and what kind of team we've been able to build since then under Mitch and Marty and Phil Greening. So he's one of those guys I would consider a part of the dream team of coaching,
sure.
So to speak.
Yeah.
And so he fits right in there.
So, if you were a gambling man, and let's take Coach Friday out of the equation because he's pretty well ensconced in the sevens program right now, who would you say are the top three candidates?
Well, if I were to gamble, I'd probably have to say that it would be Todd Clever, Blaine Scully, or somebody else. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I'm just kind of taking everything with stride.
Is that breaking news that Blaine Scully is now retired as well as Todd?
No.
All right, I didn't think so. Yeah, that would be news to Scully. Steve, you want to touch upon this topic of the head coach, the next head coach for Team USA?
Sure. I mean, the job description went out about 3 days ago, or 4 days ago, and so I'm sure the applications are piling up in Lafayette or wherever the national office is these days. Obviously, a national team coaching job is a prestigious job, both for anyone in American rugby and also for international coaches, particularly now they have actually qualified for the World Cup. So I'm sure there'll be a plethora of interesting candidates, and be remiss to prejudge who has applied, who has not applied.
So you're not going to take a stab at guessing, because that was the question that you're evading right now.
Absolument pas, as we French-speaking Scotsmen say.
Okay, all right. So, Lara, any ideas on who the next men's 15s coach will
be? Two words, Julie McCoy.
For the men's team?
Sure, why
all
not?
All right.
She's qualified, she has a lot of experience, and I admire her. She's been in my life for a long time as a coach and a friend.
You got another choice?
I haven't thought about that. Not sure.
You know what else I wanted to bring up while we're talking about, you brought up a woman coach, right? There was a great article in Prospect Magazine written by Sheena Harrington about how women's sports, specifically rugby and soccer, are never on the back page of any major publications. And she went through a whole list of publications, and there were dozens and dozens of men's articles and men's back page stories, and there was nothing for the women on the back page, and there were 13 columns total. What do you think the women have to do to get on a back page?
I mean, it's disappointing to hear that, but it's the reality of what we have right now. I just think that they have to keep working hard and try and be in the forefront and just do great things in their sport, like, you know, Serena Williams and these athletes who are just top of their game. Keep getting more people to watch them play, watch their sports, and just have more interest.
Did you feel as a member of a team that came in fifth in a Rugby World Cup that perhaps you'd be further along now?
Yes, it is disappointing to see. I've had that conversation with many friends and former coaches, and you know, I don't know what Nate and I were talking about it before we came here, but you know, in some ways the women's game has moved forward, but in some ways it's moved backwards, and you know, I'm not sure how we have to get the puzzle all together, but the pieces are there, and hopefully we can figure it out in the next couple of years.
You know, you bring up a point about moving backward. Nate, last year at this time we were in the middle of the inaugural Pro Rugby USA season. The Ohio Aviators lost on points to the Denver Stampede. As a player, where you're at your level right now, captain of Team USA against Ireland, a top nation, even though players were missing for the Lions, that's still a very, very tough squad.
How does it impact your daily thinking and your commitment to the Eagles, not knowing the what the professional climate is? Because, quite frankly, you're not going to make $1 million right now playing for the Eagles.
Yeah, no.
So how does that impact your daily thinking and your daily life?
Well, it makes it tougher. Being a domestic guy without any professional avenue, it makes it a lot tougher. You just kind of have to figure out where you can get the resources, so where you can train at the elite level.
How you
level.
Pay the rent.
How you, yeah, well, and that's the reality, too. A lot of guys get to my age. I'm 27, and they really have to pick it or choose whether they want to keep playing rugby for USA or whether they need to focus on a real job. Some domestic guys already have day jobs. Luckily enough for me, I do enough play rugby stuff that I kind of can, you know, do that part-time and still focus on my...
Stay afloat a bit.
So yeah, stay afloat and focus on my rugby career. But yeah, it just makes it tougher. You just have to dig a little bit deeper. You have to fight and claw for where you can get your opportunities to even get the experience that's needed to really shine at the international level, so...
Steve, what about a guy like this? What advice do you give him to life after rugby, or now, as a matter of fact, when everything's still in the balance? You know, we have the MLR potentially coming along. Doug Schoeninger, who was on here last week, doesn't seem to think his organization's going away. He seems to think he's going to be back on the pitch. What do you tell a guy like this?
Well, Nate's pretty much at the peak of his game, you know, so he's playing well, performing well, and just getting sort of first couple of years of top international experience. So the future's still bright for Nate. How and where does he play? So in the, you know, the best of possible world, he would get a contract offer in Europe or elsewhere. So that's what he's working for, and he's doing everything right in order to get that.
How about residency with the Sevens, or...
I think Nate's in a mode now, he can speak for himself, obviously, where he's concentrating on 15s. He's done the 7s thing, potentially could go back to 7s. He's good enough to do that.
Is that right? You're looking at 15s now instead of 7s? Or
yeah, I mean, I enjoy being a part of, what would you call it, a remote guy, being able to do my thing out here. And I'd have no problem linking up with the 7s team towards the World Cup or whatever it may be. But, you know, I enjoy being a domestic guy who has his options open to other 15s opportunities and stuff right now. It's definitely a focus of mine.
But the answer, the solution there is that we do have a better intermediate semi-pro or pro domestic league. That's what we need to work towards in order to give these guys the opportunities. So it's not just 8 guys who get foreign contracts, but we have 150 yeah. guys playing within the U.S.
Yeah. And the women.
And the women as well, yes.
And on that note, we're going to take our last break and come back with these folks after this.
So this is the 10th anniversary of the NYC Rugby Cup, which is hard to believe. It's come a long way. I think we've got over 60 teams here today, and they're all kitted out, representing different teams from across the country. We've always had a theme every year, and this is the culminating event for our partner programs and our community programs that work with us throughout the year to come and showcase their skills and their go forward attitude as well. So it's super exciting to be celebrating the 10th anniversary. Thanks to AIG and Canterbury for supporting us, all the volunteers, all the sponsors, and especially the staff and volunteers. Some fantastic rugby, lots of sportsmanship, the kids still had a blast. And now, of course, now we've finished, the sun has come out. So that's the way it goes, I guess. Every day's a rugby day.
Hey everybody, Matt McCarthy back at Studio 34 for the Fantasy Sports Network and Rugby Wrap-Up. So Nate, if there's an MLR setup and a Pro Rugby USA setup, which would you rather play in?
Oh man, I think I'd have to take the MLR route at this point.
How come?
I got a lot of teammates who are part of that Pro Rugby thing, and the way everything blew over, I don't know if I'd trust being a part of it, to be honest. But
that's a good point.
It was a great competition. It was real enjoyable to watch. I know a lot of people who followed it, a lot of guys who were a part of that enjoyed the rugby aspect, just some of the other stuff. So
why weren't you part of that? Was there a certain guy at this table that didn't pick you to be part of that, or was it a different choice?
I think it was a different choice. I think that guy would have picked me.
Steve?
I picked him for quite a few teams by now. You know, Old Blue, Northeast, any team I can pick him
but
for.
But was he on the... What was the story there?
Yeah, I was on the way to the Olympics, man.
Yeah.
It was Olympic season.
Well, you didn't say that.
Yeah.
He was a little busy training for Rio.
Yeah, Nate was heavily involved with Sevens, obviously. But what you've got to remember is that those five franchises in pro were geographically located a lot further west of here. So when you talked about players, there were lots of good players in New York, both clubs like Old Blue and AC and also Mystic, who were of the quality, who could have played and who could potentially play in an MLR type scenario here, but it just wasn't feasible or practical to have them.
Especially with that, that budget.
Yeah, yeah, especially, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the MLR is going to face the same problem.
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember, 40% of American rugby players are between Boston and D.C. So, I mean, this is a real geographical area of strength. So that any sustainable professional league has to be in A, New York, the biggest media market.
Yeah.
Boston, Philly, Toronto. These are all places where any budding league would want to be. It's where the players are. It's where the media market is. And they are logical choices for any setup that comes forward.
Lots of fans, too. In this area.
Yeah, I mean, we have a ton of youth rugby, right? We have all these, we got Play Rugby USA, which is doing great things. We've got the high school setups. New York Rugby's got the high school.
U19.
U19s, right? And Old Blue's delving in some of the kids' stuff now, aren't they?
Well, Play Rugby is pretty much...
Oh, is Old Blue now... Old Blue move. They're taking credit for the Play Rugby USA program. Like the New York Rugby Club, the oldest club in the United States, which actually has a U19 program.
Now, all these clubs contribute in their own inimitable manner, and it's a good thing. And we're in a very... we're in a lucky space in New York because there's a lot of great people involved in rugby at every level.
All right. Well, you know, my favorite quote from this show so far, I mean, the show... All episodes?
Indisputable. Indisputable.
No.
That's the quote.
Favorite quote is, I was on my way to the Olympics, man. Come on. That really much says everything, right? Yeah. You're on your way to play rugby in the Olympics, or at least have a shot at it.
Yeah,
That's awesome. That's awesome. What's it going to take for you to continue chasing the dream? What's the dream first? In the next 5 years, in a perfect world, what is your rugby career? And what's it going to take to keep you pursuing that in terms of sacrifice?
That's a long time, Matt. Most of us in this position, we kind of have to take it a couple months at a time. So I'll give you kind of my goals and what I hope for, I guess, over the next year or two leading up to World Cup 2019, which I hope to be a part of with the USA 15s team. And I think on the lead up to that, I think USA 15s has never been ranked in the world top 10. I think that's a realistic goal that we can achieve. We'll have matches in November that'll help us move up in the world rankings, and there'll be more matches hopefully as they get scheduled throughout the next couple years leading up to the World Cup. So for the USA 15s team, I would like to be a part of that process going forward and being top 10 in the World Cup. So making more history, so to speak, for the USA team, which is important. If I can just continue over the next, if you were to say 5 years, if I can just continue to leave a legacy that's worthwhile, a legacy that shows the identity and the character of what an Eagle should be, and continue to create belief in our team and in our players. And I have a lot of belief in myself, so I really think I can achieve those things. And all the while of competing for our USA 15s team without any professional setup, I hope that I personally can get involved in a overseas professional league and continue to build a rugby career that actually puts a lot more money in my pockets and food on the table and allows me to kind of build a family and stuff like that. So that's kind of how I would take it. And as long as I keep believing in myself and believing what I'm capable of and what USA is capable of, I think that'll steer me in the right direction. So
good stuff. Lara, if you were still playing rugby and you didn't see any of the opportunities presenting themselves for pro rugby, would you continue the grind?
Yeah, I mean, if I was still able to play and I was young enough and fit enough and had the time, it's a huge part of my life. It's a passion that I want to be involved in any way. So I would definitely still be playing. If I was playing club for New York, you know, they won their first national championship 2006. They won in 2010 and 2011, and then for a couple of years they weren't in the top four. So they've made themselves, they've gotten back up into the top four in the country, but they haven't won since 2011.
So. And we were well represented in that USA versus the WPL match.
Yes, we were. We had, what, 5-6 girls who were playing for both teams, which was great. But
Steve, how many women did the Old Blue team have in the... Oh, In the WPL versus Team USA.
I think
USA
you know the
match.
Answer to that. Now, Old Blue Women how tend many, to concentrate on sevens, so I think that would be...
So that was zero.
That would be the yardstick.
That would be zero?
But you didn't ask me, actually, Matt, if I could bring up about playing. You know, it's been some time since
yeah,
I played.
Yeah, ask Stevie and see what he says.
Yeah, I may be making a comeback
Steve,
here in the veterans
well,
department.
You know what? What about gold professional... Old boys.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm going to say. I mean, I will throw down the challenge. You know, if I got to mark you, I would take you on any time.
Oh, I'll play
any time.
Yeah.
The gauntlet has been thrown.
Just like Joe Kelly, my cleat marks will be all over your chest. Okay? All over.
Clean pair of heels. Because all you
clear the
seeing,
tracks.
Buddy.
Here comes the McCarthy Express. Get off the tracks, Lewis.
I would pay to see.
I'm petrified.
A lot of
petrified.
A lot of raking going on in
Please.
That game.
Please. I am too dumb to be petrified. All right? And I'm still playing, by the way. Okay? How you doing? All right. While we're not going to talk about my storied professional career, we'll have
your old boy games.
We'll have Steve Thompson, my ex-coach, tell you about my career as a rugby player. You sucked last year. You suck this year, and you'll suck next year. Was his quote.
A more succinct definition at a halftime talk I've never heard.
Yeah, no, that
probably
was
accurate as well.
That was good. He also called me the second worst winger in club history, despite the fact that I was playing center and we were winning by 19 points.
It's a good thing he believed in you, Matt.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And he thought I was somebody else because he was a Maori eight man and didn't know anything about backs, or he just hated them. But all right, we're getting hijacked here. I want to thank you guys for coming on. It's been great. Again, show flies by. I'm going to go out. Speaking of fly, I'm going to go get a fly hat like that. Steve, with your continued success coaching the Sevens people across the United States and across this great world. Lara, it's great to see that you're coaching. It's always great to have your smile
Thanks,
around.
Thanks, Matt. Good to see you, too.
And Nate, best of luck. And we just got to fill in Scully that he's now retired.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. And I just want to salute the storied career of Todd Clever, because he's talking about a long time. Todd Clever, you played till you were 34.
Awesome.
Retired on your own terms. And you didn't play wing. You played a very physical position for a very long time. Kudos.
Congrats.
On behalf of Steve Lewis.
Love you, TC.
On behalf of Steve Lewis, Lara Vivolo, and Nate Augsburger, which we still haven't found out what an Augsburger is, Matt McCarthy from Studio 34 at the Fantasy Sports Network for Rugby Wrap-Up, signing off.